This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. Whether you're investing in real estate, the stock market, or an auto repair shop, return on investment, otherwise called ROI, is a term that you've probably heard of, but maybe never truly understood or understood all of the applications that it can be used on. Well, good news for you is that is exactly what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want your question answered on here or just have a question for me, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to me about accounting and tax services for your shop? Shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. And lastly, but surely not leastly, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to hire the next rock star for your team, give ProMotive a call. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing ProMotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. So I was going back on this specific topic. I was kind of surprised at first because I was like, we have never talked about return on investment really on this platform before. And I know that I've talked about it. We've mentioned it a couple of times, but I truly did not think that we had done an episode until I looked back and saw that we did, but probably years ago and not like how we're doing it now. To get into what is return on investment, we have to kind of start with the reason that got me interested today. Because you guys hear something like a return on investment and you think to yourself, well, investing, right? Maybe the stock market, maybe, you know, this is what banks are looking at. But return on investment, especially stripped down to its most simplest format, is generally how I really look at all deals or even business decisions. And if you want to look at something as simple as going out and buying an alignment rack, you're doing a return on investment calculation in your head, whether you know it or not. How much is this going to cost? If I spend this much money, how much is I going to be able to sell it for? And ultimately, I'm going to spend this money with Hunter or whoever else you're going to get your alignment machines from, and the customers are going to return that investment. And if you look at that and say, man, my return on investment is going to be like 30 days, then of course you're going to buy that. If you look at that same alignment rack and say, that will not return my investment for 30 years, you probably will not buy an alignment rack. Some of you guys, whether you know it or not, have already made that decision. Still don't think that it's true. Why do you not have every single piece of equipment that they make for every single vehicle that you own? Well, Hunt, I would never go out and buy a $1,000 tool for a car I'm only going to see once. So you do understand return on investment. You're using it every single day. We just need to kind of talk about it in a little bit more detail and maybe get you some of the foundationals that you didn't even know that you already knew. That is not why we're here today. Why we are here today was really specifically about buying and selling a repair shop. Then I was really talking on the buyer side of things. Because what ends up happening when we talk about selling their business is a lot of times I am talking to the sellers, right? Most of my clients are the ones that are selling. And yeah, a lot of times my clients are also the ones buying the shop. But for every 9 sales I'm a part of 1 purchase generally, if that makes sense. But a lot of times before you guys buy a shop, you don't even know I exist. You come and hire me a couple of years after, but then all of our clients at some point are going to sell and retire. So we're always going to see it on the other side of things. The reason why this came up is because of that exact same conversation. When we talk to sellers, what do we talk about? When we talk to sellers, we are not generally talking about return on investment because there is no return left. Whatever you guys have invested, whatever you've earned has already paid you back or hasn't paid you back. We now have a separate transaction. And really for this one, it's a really long-term return on investment. How long, how much money, and you know, we'll talk about a little bit, how much time have you invested in this business for 30 years and how much are you about to get from it? If you want to start putting this the return on investment on the seller side of it, we could probably have a really uncomfortable conversation of, yeah, that's really cool that you just got $400,000 for that shop, but that $400,000 represents your life's work in monetary format. You just spent 30 years building this business and your return on investment was 400 grand. That's a very oversimplification because I assume that this business didn't give you your entire lifestyle, didn't pay for your life, your kid's life, your employee's life on it. But again, as you're measuring this stuff, you can measure return on investment any different way. But a lot of times sellers are not talking that stuff. The most common things that seller talk is stuff like multiples. Hey, I'm making 100 grand a year. I want a 3x multiple. I want to make $300,000 or sell this business for $300,000. Sellers talk years. You know, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it for this many years. I'm going to hold the note for this long. Sellers talk interest rates. Here's how you're going to finance this. Here's what kind of rate I want to see. And then lastly, sellers talk price on this. I want $3 million for it because me as a buyer, I'm probably not going to be spending $3 million. A bank is. As a seller, they are actually receiving all of that money one time. So if you're saying, Hunt, sellers talk like this, sellers talk years, they talk multiples, they talk interest rate, they talk price, what do buyers talk? First and foremost, let's be real, buyers do talk price. But when we're talking about price, generally they're looking at something else, and that is return on investment. Because if I look at something and I say, great, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy that shop for $1 million, am I really looking for my $1 million to be made whole, or am I looking for what I've actually invested in that business to be made whole? Let me try that again, because I think some of you probably didn't understand what I meant by that. When I buy a business, generally I'm not using my own cash. So we have a lopsided transaction. The seller is receiving 100% of the cash, when in most situations, the buyer is probably only putting up 10% of the deal. A bank is financing the rest. And so when you look at something like this and you say, well, why can't I just talk price with the buyer and the seller? The price for the seller is something that you're going to get instantaneously today. And if a auto repair shop works out well, there should be no cost or no capital outlay in the future for the buyer. Why? Because if the business is profitable and you put the down payment down on the business should have enough money to pay its own debts at the very least. It should have enough money to pay its own debts and give off profit to the business. But if nothing else, it really should just be paying for itself. So if I'm able to walk into a repair shop with zero money down, what is my return on investment if that shop is profitable? You can't even do that because you can't have a return on investment when your investment is zero. That's like striking gold. You didn't put any money down. You got a bunch of money back. That is the best opportunity you could ever find. Why aren't more people doing this? And that leads us to the second part about this. When we talk about return on investment, most of you guys are familiar with the one aspect of time. So when I'm judging a return on investment, I obviously have to look at other factors of it, but one of the biggest things is time. Would I rather get $5 back today or $5 back in 10 years? Those change my interest in that investment level. And then the other side of it is risk. How risky is this investment? The riskier it is, the higher the return that I'm going to have. The lower the risk, the lesser return I'd probably be willing to take as well. I know you guys got it now, but before we get into the actual nuts and bolts of really using this in a repair shop, I want to go down through one quick example here. We talked about what side is using this. Sellers using one side, buyers talking another side. We talked about how risk and time are both kind of very important and really the two probably biggest determiners of return on investment. If you still don't believe me, let's go down through one last exercise where I can kind of show you the time and risk side of this so that you understand it. The reason why a lot of times we don't like to talk price to a buyer is because they don't have enough information to make the proper determination on that price other than just surface level. And to illustrate that, I'm going to give you a great deal here. I'm going to give you present you an opportunity, and this opportunity is going to be worth $100,000. At the end of this investment, it's going to be worth $100,000. What questions do you need to ask me if you're going to be able to say if you're interested or not? Because this is like what it's like going to a buyer and saying, my shop is $1 million. All right, well, how long is it going to take me to make that back? How risky is this? How is it done in the past? All of these great questions, which are, again, unpacking what the real return on investment is. So if you're looking at this opportunity, rightfully so, you're going to ask the first thing, well, how much money am I going to make on this? If we look at this and we say, well, that investment's going to be worth $100,000 and we only had to put $80,000 in that, then I'm going to say that's pretty good. Now, if I'm going to say, what if I invest $99,000 in it and I'm only going to get $100,000? I'm not sure that that's that good. So the first and foremost is how much am I going to make here? Again, if you just look at this investment and you say, well, one of these investments, you give 80 and you get 100, and one of these investments, you give 99 and you get 100. So now we have a little bit more information other than just it's going to be worth $100,000. Which one would you take? If you're saying that I'm going to take the option one on this, then again, you still don't have enough information because we don't have this under the lens of time. All right, we're going to make $20,000 or we're going to make $1,000, but time is money. How long is this going to take? If I go back and I look at this investment and it turns out that, yeah, that $80,000 investment turns into $100,000, but that's going to take 10 years. Is that still the mode, the proper investment when you compare the other one that's only going to make us $1,000, but that's a 10-day investment? I'm going to make $1,000 in 10 days, or I can make $20,000 in 20 years or in 10 years. This is where it comes down to this, why you got to look at return on investment and return on investment in time. Time is money. I will take a 1% return on investment every day, all day of the week, if you're going to give me a 1% return every single day for my money. If I have to keep you that with 365 days, I'm probably not that interested unless I have to do absolutely no work and there's absolutely no risk. We're getting closer here, and I think that you guys are starting to understand this. Let's go into a couple more situations, and some a lot closer to what you guys are used to dealing with. So to go in and kind of judge this risk and time perspective on it, let's go down through a couple different investments here that probably are something that you've come across in the past. If we want to go at probably the most risky investment and some of the ones that can have the largest returns in the shortest amount of time, I would be remiss to not mention crypto. Crypto is often kind of referred to as gambling just for the sole fact that it is extremely volatile. There are some aspects of this that is gambling, but gambling means that, you know, it's almost all luck and no skill. And I think anyone that says that about the crypto market nowadays is probably not the most educated. Sure, it's a Wild West. Sure, it doesn't have as much regulations on it, but this is a free open market that we've kind of been able to understand, study, and measure over probably, what, 5-8 years or so. Why is crypto such a good investment if it goes well? Like I said, it's extremely volatile. So if you have a volatile asset, that means it could just as likely go left as it could go right. Also, it could just as likely go up as it could go down. You see 300, 400, 5,000% returns on investment in one day in crypto markets. You also see the same thing on the downside of this. So generally, if you have a higher upside return on investment as well, whether you know it or not, you probably have the exact same downside risk. If you see something that has an upside potential of 60%, then in most situations has a downside risk just as much or not even more. I will make a large argument on here is that if you have something that has an annual return of over 40%, then there is a pretty strong risk on the other side that you could have a negative 100% correction of your money or return on your money. Don't believe me? We'll talk about that a little bit later. If you're looking at something like crypto, why would someone be invested in crypto if it's that volatile? If it has that much of an uncertainty on it? Because their return on investment is really good. If I have extra money to lay around, of course it's going to be in something like crypto because it's something that you can hit a home run on. You could put 10 grand and that could turn into $1 million. Nothing that we're talking about here later has those kind of returns or the potentials. But just like I mentioned on there, if you have something that is that volatile, do you think that you would want your majority of your portfolio to be invested in that or a small percentage? So my clients are invested exclusively in crypto. They think it's the future on this and they think that they understand it enough and maybe a lot of them have done very well, right? Again, your own investment strategy is your own, but generally the most proper investment portfolio is a number of different investments. And again, more specifically, what people are looking at that is a number of different investments that probably have varying levels of risk and varying levels of return on investment. You want to have something, everything super standard. You want to put everything into a savings account. Right now, savings accounts, and if you want to put money market in there, is around 4%. Maybe it's 3%, maybe it's 4%, but it's not going to be less than that. There's no downside risk because there's no upside benefit. You have a good month in your savings account, great, you're going to get 3.5%. You have a bad month in your savings account, great, you're going to get 3.5%. Why do most people just not leave their money in a savings account? Nowadays, we do see a lot of people doing that because if you look at something like your return on investment from the stock market, a lot of people don't see the benefit of increasing the risk and not getting that much return on investment. If you're sitting here now and looking at your money market getting 4%, are you that excited to go and try to make 6 to 7% in the stock market? Probably not. And that's what we're seeing a lot of this in some sectors on here, that there's a lot of money just not in the market. Yeah, over the last 50 years, the market has returned probably around a 10% return on investment on average. But if I give you an investment that is a can't lose, not going to lose any money or even lose a single penny and appreciate 4% every single year, it's going to be very hard to argue that I should put a large amount of my money outside of that into something I'm hope best case gets 10%. And again, low side risk could be realistically in the stock market, probably 30 or 40%. Does the upside outweigh the downside. So we can't just measure the upside, we got to measure the downside.
Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive, on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry and recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit gopromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry.
The whole idea on risk, though, is it's market tolerance. You have a risky investment, you're going to have to make that return higher so that the market looks at that and says, hey, the risk or the benefits outweigh the risk, I'm willing to do this. You have a really risky investment with a really low return on investment, you're going to have very little interest. If you have something with virtually no risk on it and you have a massive return on investment, first and foremost, it's probably fraud. And second off, you're probably paying out too much money, because if you're returning that much and it's got low risk, you're going to have more people than you know what to do with trying to throw their money at you. And like I said, the reason why I say it's probably fraud, every investment that I've ever seen where people look at this and say, this is a crazy return on investment, has ended up being fraud. Fun fact, I actually was a victim of one of these ones. So this fund was paying out 10% every 90 days. And so it was like a bridge loan. You gave them 30 grand on it. 90 days later, you know, you get 3 grand back, or you could roll it in there. Over 40% APR on this, all backed by real estate. Yeah, turns out it wasn't legit. The guy currently, I think, in federal custody, got a couple clients on there. But again, guys, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. That return on investment doesn't match the risk. If you have that much of a can't lose investment and you're willing to pay that much money on it, then you're either fraudulent, you're, you know, pencil whipping stuff. We do see some of these investments sometimes which have been linked to money laundering. If you just don't care, you just need to make this money legal in some way, shape, or form on it, you don't mind paying out these investments. It's out there, guys. If it's come across my plate, if I've seen this stuff on it, then you guys see this. These are words of advice. These are words of caution. And in some cases, these are words of experience. We have part of this. When we're measuring return on investment, we got to look at the volatility. We got to look at the risk of this. We got to look at how much money it's making. But the last piece of this, and arguably probably the most important on this, is time. How much time or any time am I going to have to be involved in this investment? Because for me personally, time is my most valuable asset and probably what I'm going to judge this deal on the most. How much energy, effort, or expertise do you need to combine with your money, active or passive? Passive is pretty simple. And we're going to come back to this in a second because I want to talk about the passive side for auto repair shops. If you look at passive investments, you're going to look at like what we're talking about above. Generally stocks, bonds, crypto, savings account, things like that. You don't have to do anything. You're just giving us your money and the money's going to work for you. But like we looked at for generally stocks and savings account, the return on investment is fairly low because you don't have to do anything at all. If you want to go on the other side of this and you want to say active involvement, this is you're actually working for this money. And the most common thing that we can probably all agree on is being self-employed. Auto repair shops are usually sold at around a 33% return on investment, meaning that if you pay $300,000 for an auto repair shop, I would expect you to make back your entire investment in 3 years. The reason I say that is because the most commonly agreed upon multiple of valuations is a 3x multiple. So if your business makes $100,000 a year, you're going to list that and probably sell it for 300 grand, and someone's going to buy that and finance it for probably 7 years. If you look at that, this person is probably going to make their money back in 3 years, hopefully quicker on that. But I will actually argue that their cash on cash return on investment is much, much higher than that. So the reason I said this is if your business is making 100 grand a year, let's say that the new owner, it's still making 100 grand and I'm going to put $50,000 away for debt service. That means first year as a business owner, I would expect to make $50,000. If I went SBA on this one and I bought a business worth $300,000, I would only have to put $30,000 down. But just to keep simple math, I'm going to say I'm going to have to put some more of my own money in there. And I put a grand total of $50,000 of my own cash down. I'm not going to spend any more money on paying the note payments because the business is going to pay for it. I put $50,000 of my own cash, and year one, I'm going to make back that much in profit. So even though it is a 33% return on investment, auto repair shops are generally a 100% return on cash investment. Very quick return on investment. One of the things that makes this industry so attractive is that also you guys have very low cost of equipment. If you look at how little you guys can have in equipment on a business that generates $3, 4, 5 million in assets, it's just not seen that much in other industries. If you want to kind of put it into perspective of this industry, imagine doing $4 to $5 million and you had to do it with tow trucks. Some of you guys are, and you know how much you've invested into tow trucks. Think of a repair shop that's doing the same amount. They're probably spending 10, 15% of what a tower is spending on their actual equipment. The cash to open these things, the cash to, you know, put down on them, generally dwarfs in comparison of, you know, what these businesses can actually make. So if you say to yourself, well, Hunt, if starting a repair shop gives me a 33% return on investment in the classical sense on this, and a lot argue that's 100%, you know, cash on cash investment, why is everyone not doing this? So I'll tell you the first thing on it is these numbers are public knowledge, and this is the reason why you see professional investors, you know, guys leaving corporate America and coming to be self-employed and open a repair shop. From a numbers perspective, from an investor standpoint, this industry on paper looks really, really good. I will argue that this industry in real life is good, but the reason why I say on paper versus real life is it's not easy to run a reshop. Yes, if run correctly, you can get a 33% return on investment. But just like we were talking about before with risk and risk tolerance and things like that, if you think that it's unrealistic to get a negative 100% return on investment for a shop, then I think that you have an opportunistic view of the industry that you're in, or maybe the nature of being self-employed. If I sign the dotted line, I buy this business for $300,000. 2 months from now, one of my employees does something and ends up killing a customer on it, and I'm held liable on, I'm losing my entire investment. I'm going from $300,000 to zero. And in the case of personal liability lawsuits and things like that, I might even be going less than zero. I'm going to lose even more than I came to start with. This is not a word of advice. This is not something to scare you away from getting into this industry. This is to kind of prove what have always thought. Yeah, this industry is good. This industry has the opportunity to have a lot of returns, but nothing happens without the proper business owner doing the right things. It's not as easy as selling parts and labor, even though we say it all the time on it. But if done correctly, you can make a ton of money in this industry. I would be remiss if I did not talk about one thing here that I've really been trying to talk about, you know, a couple episodes, but it didn't naturally fit through. And what I want to talk about is private equity and the passive aspect of this. We talked about judging a business. I quickly said, hey, we can't look at an auto repair shop as a passive investment. Passive investments are things like savings account, brokerage funds, mutual funds, and things like that. But what if I was to tell you, you still have your shop, but you need to do as much work as you did as a savings account? Would you be willing to take less than 33% return on your investment? If you're working in your shop right now, every single day, and I was to say, hey, you do not have to do anything. You put your money in there and you get some money back. How low of a return on investment would you be willing to take? Would you be willing to take less than 20%? Would you be willing to take less than 15%? And everyone's number is different. And that's probably part of this example as well, too. But the whole idea here is if I'm actively there, if I'm trading my time for dollars, I need to have a much larger return on investment than when I'm trading my dollars for dollars. If I'm not doing any work, then I don't really care that much. And if I am doing the work, I care a ton. And this kind of segues into what we're seeing in the private equity world. Private equity has really kind of messed up the valuation game because the private equity guys will generally pay a lot more than what an individual investor. And the reason of that is all comes down to ROI. I should say that it's larger than ROI because some of this is consolidation of costs and synergy and different things on this. But again, all they're looking there is ROI. Private equity guys care about one thing and one thing only, and that is making money, and maybe their second thing is making more money. So when they're looking at something, I will guarantee you guys, the only thing that they're judging your business on is ROI. They don't really care how you're doing it. They don't really care where you're doing it. For those of you that have been approached or even bought out by these guys, you might be surprised at how little they actually cared about how you were doing this because they're just looking at the numbers. They're just looking at ROI. But the biggest thing that comes out to me and where people ask is they're saying, Hunt, I just got an offer from Greg down the street on it. He's looking to open up another location. He offered me $1 million. This business is making like $300,000 a year. I think I'm going to take it. Now, sure enough, he calls me, a week later, and this has happened, I'm going to say 20 times. Private equity guy Z came into town and said for this same business that he looked at the same way, he's going to give me $2 million. He's going to give me double of what this guy's willing to give me. How can two different people look at the same business and come up with such different numbers? There is some argument here that when these guys come in, that they're going to cut costs, there's going to be synergy, that they're going to have some redundancy of cost by going multi-location, and that their return on investment is going to be higher than yours because they're going to instantly overnight become more profitable. I have seen that for most situations, but not to the material level that I think it could justify these valuations. Almost all of these guys come in and more or less do what you guys have been doing. Some of them do less, and they kind of just keep the profitable things. And most all of them have been able to kind of maintain profitability, but I have not seen firsthand the justification on, well, hey, they're paying me like I'm making 200 grand, even though I'm only making 100, because overnight they're going to come in and make all these changes and make way more money. I'm not seeing that. I see them making more money in different ways, but in a grand lot sense of this, they're making similar money doing similar things. The big aspect of this, of why they are willing to pay more money on this, is because the guys that are paying the money are never going to step foot in the shop, never plan to on it, and they're going to sell this to someone else before they ever do. I'm looking at this as an independent owner saying, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to commit 2,000 hours a year, and for the next 3 years, that's 6,000 hours. And I'll do this, and I want to, but I'm going to have to get a 33% return on my investment. I would even argue that that's not even the best investment if you're weighing those 6,000 hours, but again, you can kind of see that. Now, if we look from the private equity side of things, they're looking at this and they're saying, I'm never going to step foot in it this year. I'm never going to step foot in next year. If I put this money into a stock market, I could maybe get 10%. If I put it into a savings account, I can maybe take 4%. You think that they'd be willing to take 15, 16, 17, 18%? Absolutely. And a lot of these guys do. When they look at it, you have to look at their return on investment is being measured under the same status, under the same rules, but completely different use cases. You're looking at return on investment from an active standpoint. These guys are looking at the same investment opportunity in the same industry in passive. And that's where the stuff starts to get out of whack. So just like risk, the involvement in time is probably the biggest driver of ROI. And if I have to work, I better be compensated for it. And if I don't have to, I'm probably willing to take a much lower ROI. I hope this was enlightening for you, and I encourage you to do this anytime in the future when making investing, borrowing, or any cash flow decisions. Ever feel like you're making an emotional decision or opinion on something financial? Well, you probably are. But if you instead take the emotion out of it and look at the ROI exclusively, a lot of times these complicated decisions become a little bit more clear. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions or ideas for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.